Hello and welcome. You're watching Left, Right and Center. I'm Vedant Agarwal. Well, coming up on the show, experts and officers will decode what the unified pension scheme means for you. What are its ramifications? What is the cost of the new pension scheme? Will it cost too much to the government treasury? All of that and more coming up. But first up, the headlines. The Mollywood Me Too movement explodes. This as the movement forces government action. The Kerala government forms a special investigation team to probe the Hema Commission findings. The high-level women police officers are the part of the committee. This as bigwigs step down in the Mollywood Me Too movement. Filmmaker Ranjit resigns as the Kerala Film Academy chairman. The resignation comes after actor Srilekha speaks up. Srilekha tells NDTV the sexual misconduct and misbehavior has been normalized in film industries. The CBI conducts multiple raids in the Kolkata rape and murder case. The CBI raids R.G. Kar, ex-principal in the corruption case. This as the forensic medicine doctor of the hospital has been held by the central agency. The lie detector test of the prime accused in the case has been completed. Ahead of the state polls, the Prime Minister's Lakpati Didi outreach. The Prime Minister vows strict action on crimes against women. He says culprits will not be spared and the focus must be on strengthening laws on crimes against women. A picture of the murder accused actor Darshan goes viral and it shows Darshan getting VIP treatment inside jail. Is he a VIP prisoner? Well, the DGP prisons of Karnataka tells NDTV that the probe is on. In Delhi, the BJP brass in a huddle. The Prime Minister chairs the BJP's key election meeting. JNK and Haryana candidates are on agenda. And our big focus on Left, Right and Centre this evening. Well, in a move that could impact more than 20 lakh government employees reeling under the pension predicament, the Modi-led cabinet has announced a potentially game-changing pension scheme. The unified pension scheme, with the focus on social security of government employees, assures 50% of salary on retirement as pension. In what many would call a fiscally radical move, the cabinet has decided to increase the government contribution to pension by 4%. Not only this, it also guarantees an assured pension to families of the pensioner. And that too, 60% of the total sum. As per estimates, this will cost the government around 6,200 crore rupees, especially in the first year, and also put extra government burden on the government treasury. But is it a reform whose time had come? Well, the move away from the NPS may be described as a move to appease a key political constituency of government employees. But it does address key concerns and gaps in India's pension framework in trying to prioritize those who have spent years in service and their families. But what is the cost of the unified pension scheme? Is it a fiscally prudent move? Will it end the pension peeve? Well, joining me on the show this evening, I'm being joined by a panel of experts and top officers. With me, Parma Sen, Additional Secretary, Department of Expenditure under the Ministry of Finance. Also with me, Pankaj Sharma, Joint Secretary, Financial Services. K. Mahesh, President of the Delhi Administration Officers Academic Forum, is also with us. And Dipanshu Mohan, Professor of Economics and Dean of the O.P. Jindal University, visiting professor at London School of Economics. Thanks very much for being with us. Going across to you first, Ms. Sen. Break it down for us. How is the unified pension scheme different from the NPS? What does it really mean for our government employees?
Good evening. Essentially, NPS is a defined contribution funded pension scheme. The entire burden of risk in NPS rests with the employee because market-linked returns give the pension benefits. In UPS, we have tried to address a key concern of the employees, which was lack of assurance regarding the pension quantum. In broad terms, it was a concern regarding lack of assurance. So this lack of assurance boils down to one, lack of assurance regarding pension, then lack of assurance regarding family pension, assurance on minimum pension, and finally regarding the DNS allowance or the inflation indexation of the pension. Now, these were the key concern areas and the aspirations of the employees, which has been addressed by this new scheme, the United Pension Scheme, which has elements of the NPS because it is still a defined contribution scheme and it is also a fully funded scheme, but it also has elements of defined benefit. The defined benefits were what I just mentioned just now regarding assured pension, assured family pension, minimum pension and inflation indexation.
Certainly the focus is on social security, the security of the government employees as well as their families. So was that a key focus in sort of formulating this policy as well, which is why we're calling it reform with a humane face, because the focus and the priority are government employees, their social security and also their families, because it's interesting to note that the families will be entitled to as much as 60% of the pension after the death of the pensioner.
That is right. It is something to assure the life of the retired government employee, including that of his spouse. And in the present NPS system, whether the family pension exists or not is a choice of the employee. So now that has been assured by the UPS system. That is exactly what we have been talking about, assurance.
All right. Pankaj Sharma is also with us. Mr. Sharma, come in on this point. What really is the cost of the unified pension scheme? Is it a fiscally prudent scheme? Now, that is what many have talked about. Many financial experts have also said that perhaps this would be a burden on the government exchequer as well. So if you could sort of break it down for us, the cost-benefit analysis, what will it cost the government? Not, you know, in terms of exact or specific numbers, but in generally, would it become a burden on the government treasury and also on the taxpayers' money?
Thanks, Siddhant. So if you look at the old pension scheme in which the entire benefits were borne by the future generations, in UPS, one added advantage is that the government is taking the entire burden upfront and not leaving anything for the future tax revenues. So in terms of cost-benefit analysis, one big plus for the UPS is this, that the entire liability is completely borne today and immediately, and nothing is, as a matter of fact, thrown up in the future. Number one. And number two, everything is transparently accounted for under the UPS scheme. Lastly, on account of its contributory nature, the corpus will keep on building up, and as and when the employee gets retired, he is assured of a 50% pension, which is guaranteed to him by the government. And 60% will be given to him as a family pension in the case of his demise. And other benefits which have been already indicated in this in the UPS scheme.
Two points there, Mr. Sharma, if you would like to elaborate on that. One is that the government has decided to increase its contribution to the pension by 4%. So that is a radical move, as many would say. And also a higher lump sum at retirement. The lump sum is not really contingent to or subject to a subsidy plan chosen during retirement. So what was the thinking behind these two moves? Increasing the government's share or government's contribution pension radically, as many would say, by 4%, in fact, more than 4%.
So if you look at the entire schemes come with more benefits. And the biggest benefit is assured pension, inflation indexation, family pension, and the assured minimum pension. Now, all of these will cost money. So depending on the actuarial valuation, which were done by the PFRDA, an additional contribution of 4.5% from 14%, which was earlier provided, has been made. So I think that this 4.5% has been made to ensure that as and when the employee retires, he is assured of his 50% pension and along with the other benefits. Now, 1/10 of the basic pay plus journal's allowance for every 6 months, which an employee works for, will be a lump sum payment, which is completely unrelated to his pension amount.
Right.
So, for example, if an employee works for, let us say, 30 years in his service period, he will get approximately 6 months basic pay plus journal's allowance as his lump sum amount. And it will have no impact on his pension amount.
Right.
So, it's a one-time payment which he will get.
That's an important point. Mr. Deepanshu Mohan is also with us. He's written a very interesting piece on this, in fact. Mr. Mohan, you know, one of the reasons why the OPS was withdrawn was that the idea was that it could become unsustainable in the long run. In fact, many have described the Unified Pension Scheme also as an OPS-styled scheme. But do you find that this could, in a sense, become unsustainable? And then what would your answer be to those who say that, you know, it was about time that we had this sort of reform because ultimately all government employee associations and bureaucrats across across categories have welcomed this?
Yeah, so Vedant, I would probably submit that the rationale for announcing the Unified Pension Scheme at this point clearly comes across as a political development very less understood by any sound economic rationale. And I'll give you one statistic, which, I mean, in fact, for the BJP government, for its entire 10-year period, despite a lot of the other things not going right in terms of managing in recent years, inflation or creating sufficient employment growth, the middle class not being too happy with, and that's clearly something which the government is trying to address now with each of these interventions. Remember, they are very ad hoc. I mean, nothing was said about this in the budget, which was presented very recently. But if you look at one statistic, I think it's very important to put this in context. The pension liabilities for the center and states had jumped manifold in the three decades that you saw between 1990 and 2020. In 1990, center's pension bill was somewhere around 3,272 crore. And for the states, it was around 3,131 crore. In 2020, the center's bill jumped 58 times to 190,886 crore.
That's right.
While for the states, it had gone up 125 times. Now, why this statistic is important to put it in context is we do not really understand the future fiscal impact of this repackaged, and I would use the word repackaged, OPS scheme to ensure that there is some level of certainty offered to government employees. Largely, the job creation in the government sector is not making most eligible for pension in any case. There's heavy subcontractualization. We all know that, where a lot of employees hired do not even get pensioned entitled. But even if they are, the Vajpayee government made it very clear by introducing the NPS scheme on January 1st, 2004, that with rising life expectancy, a heightened uncertainty around medical facilities improving and the life of people enlarging in over on the average lifespan, it is very unsustainable to what extent you will have a fiscal impact of this calculated. So it would be good for the government, if it is really thinking about reform, to lay out the numbers beforehand in somewhat a reasonable period of time where you have a medium to long-term fiscal calculus worked out.
Okay.
What I would see this as a clearly regressive measure, we are going back into two decades of a period of time where the old pension scheme had given way to a more pragmatic NPS. You could have done much more around ensuring a minimum pension through a slight tinkering of the NPS scheme. You didn't need to do something like a radical restructuring without opening the fiscal numbers that clearly.
So, so I see those are strong words there. those are strong words. You call it regressive. But I think the larger point you're making is that this is perhaps not sustainable. Mr. K. Mahesh, would you like to come in on this? While, of course, most bureaucrat associations, officers associations have welcomed this, how would you respond to what Mr. Mohan is saying? That, you know, if the focus is so much on reform and stability of the government employee structure in the country, then what should be prioritized? Our long-term goals, as far as inflation is concerned, job creation is concerned, you know, as Mr. Mohan was pointing out, too much emphasis on contractual jobs. So, you know, to really reform the pension framework and to really reform what employees ultimately get, you need to focus on these long-term goals as well. Mr. K. Mahesh.
Vedant, first of all, I don't agree with the gentleman. This is a progressive measure, and we must welcome this. That's point number one. You cannot roll back pension for the employees. This is all over the world, in developed countries. The issue is that how do you have a pension scheme? Earlier, in the old pension scheme, which was in operation before 31st December 2003, it was funded by the revenue of the government. The NPS had a scheme which was market linked, that you made a contribution. So all over the world, in the developed part of the world, you find that the pension are contributory, and that money is used to generate resources. Of course, it's a risky kind of a venture, but how do you invest which gives you good returns with low risk? That is the issue. You cannot do away with the pension, that you roll back pension, like we are a welfare state, but we have to ensure that which is there for the pension, from where does it come? So that is point number one. Number two, if you look at the fiscal, the financial implication is not very high. As Madam Sen rightly said it, it's about 6,250 crore plus 500 crore. That makes it 7,025. If you look at even for the states, now one feature of this is that the states can also implement it, right? Now, if you look at the debt GDP ratio of the state, it is between 30 to 32%. The states can certainly, you know, they can also have this UPS. That's very important. Of course, this is the average across 28 states, minus Punjab, Kerala, West Bengal, Andhra, and Rajasthan. If you look at the central government, Vedant, you know, if you look at the tax collection, the buoyancy is so high. If you look at the indirect taxes, the direct taxes, I think 7,025 crore is not a very big sum for a welfare state. And to incentivize our employees that they have a sense of security, both economic and social, and this will also boost economic growth and consumption.
But the debt to GDP ratio that you talked about, I mean, let's not go into specific numbers, but is it feasible for a financially stretched government? I think that is a larger point. I can see Dipanshu disagreeing with that, with what Mr. Mahesh said. I'll come to you, Dipanshu, but Padma Sen, you had a point. Go ahead.
No, the point that I was trying to make is that this is a responsible fiscal measure that has been taken, because the nature of the pension system has not changed from NPS. It is still contributory. It is still fully funded. Fully funded means that the payment issue is not being procrastinated. We are not sort of deferring the problem that it will come later on. So in a sense, we are taking care of the intergenerational as well as the inter-citizen equity by ensuring and stressing upon fully funded nature of UPS. So fiscally, government has considered it and feels that it is a very responsible scheme.
So one important
there is
point...
Yes,
go ahead.
No. The whole point is that, yes, there is an addition, and that addition is to backstop the assurance that is being provided as a result of the, to meet the aspirations and demands of the government employees.
Okay, so one important point that you made is that the nature of this scheme remains intact in the sense that it's still contributory. Dipanshu Mohan, you were disagreeing with what Mr. Mahesh said earlier and also Ms. Sen's point. Go ahead.
You know, I have great reverence for the esteemed panel, but I have to say this. See, on one hand, there is a lot of focus on talking about a CapEx-based crowding in effect of private investment, no clear talking about welfare ideology, which was dependent on a very entitlement-centric approach. The government on average has cut down spending on schemes like MNREGA, food security programs, all of these plans that for which funding on a revenue expenditure side has come down was compensated by a higher capital expenditure. Then the states like Himachal Pradesh in 2023, Rajasthan in 22, Chhattisgarh in 22, or Punjab in 22 went back to the OPS old pension scheme. It was said that it was ravery or a sort of a dole being offered in gains of political ends. Now, what has happened inside the government that you have all, if the idea is that the NPS regulation is not changed much, why do you need a unified pension scheme? Just make an assured sum of money offered to people who have completed X number of years in government service and do it as part of the NPS scheme. There was a lot of thinking done when the NPS scheme was brought in. And just on one point, the debt to GDP ratio for state, I mean, the RBI carried a whole paper out.
That's right.
The Reserve Bank of India in 2023 mentioned that with the old pension scheme principles going back, which the unified pension scheme talks about, the cumulative fiscal burden would be as high as 5 times of the NPS. This was RBI's numbers in 2023. So I really don't see any logical economic rationale for this to happen.
Okay, Mr. Pankaj Sharma has come in on this, because the point that Mr. Mohan is making is that what could have been done was some sort of tweaking perhaps of the NPS and not bringing about an entirely new scheme that is being described as a radical move away from the NPS. What was really the thinking behind bringing about an entirely new scheme, the unified pension scheme?
So, Vedant, if you look at the entire scheme, it is basically something, it maintains the defined contributory nature of the NPS. At the same point of time, it brings in the defined benefit element of the old pension scheme. Now, if you look at the entire scheme, broadly, the scheme is a slight modification of the NPS in the sense that it assures to the employees a certainty in terms of pension, in terms of inflation indexation. Having said that, it maintains many of the features of NPS again. My reference to my esteemed panelist from Jindal University, all that he is saying is that kindly assure pension to the person within the NPS framework, and which is precisely what the government has done.
Okay. So you're saying that it's the best combination of the NPS and the OPS. But Mr. K. Mahesh, as a bureaucrat yourself, do you think that there was a pressing need for a new pension scheme, for an overhaul, as many would suggest, of the entire pension framework?
See, Vedant, you have to understand that every policy in a democracy is an outcome of political feasibility and economic rationality. You cannot base every policy and programs on the basis of economic rationality in a democracy. So please understand, you have to address the issues which are very, very important. And this UPS scheme is certainly a very progressive scheme, let me tell you. Of course, we need to work on reforms in addition to what has been said. We need to increase the retirement age. Now, as you know, our longevity has gone very high. So we need to have the retirement age at the age of 65. You look at the Western democracies, the bureaucracies, they retire at the age of 65. Somewhere it is more. So we got to work on increasing the retirement age. That is one solution. This will also help us. In fact, there are a lot of posts which we have not been able to fill up. That will also get filled up. In a way, that will also get filled up. So this is very important. Now, number three point is, we need to have an expert group that the NPS funds which come to us, how do you invest it?
Okay.
Without, you know, without suffering great risk. You know, it gives us a good return, yet okay. at the same time, we are not facing that extreme risk. That's very important.
Okay, Dipanshu, a quick response to that. I'm afraid I only have 30 seconds on the debate. But the point Mr. Mahesh made on democracy, you know, whatever you said about fiscal prudence, about, you know, the economic ramifications, those are fair points. But the fact is that there was a demand from within the stakeholders, from government employees, for a potential overhaul of the pension scheme.
The stakeholders seem to be the middle class now because the government is struggling clearly in terms of getting their confidence. It's as simple as that.
And no, I say, would you concede that there was a demand, there was a need to do this?
No, there was a need. There's a need to increase MGNREGA allocations. There's a need to be able to allocate money for MSME sector, which has been struggling and has decimated employment creation. Hmm. There are a lot of things that are not going right. I mean, the logic of the government has been for last 10 years that it is about fiscal consolidation. We don't want to spend money on entitlement. We, on one hand, we want to give free ration. On the other hand, there has to be a lot of focus on corporate tax cuts and the ability to ensure that there is sufficient leeway for revenue generation for the top 10%. And the middle class, which has squeezed, now the government realizes that there is a need to think about pension. So the last two panelists have already laid out that there is discussions on retirement age.
Yes.
That should have happened.
And thinking I think your point that this is also part of a larger discussion, larger debate around.
So this is clearly not well thought through.
I mean, I'll have to leave it there because I'm completely running out of time. But thanks all very much for being with us. An interesting conundrum there, interesting opinions. But of course, this will come, you know, this will be coming into effect from April next year. So this is very much what the cabinet decision is. With that, we'll step into a short break now. That's it on Left, Right and Center this evening.